The numbers told the story, they always do.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
It is a numbers game, hour number two, right here at VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. Skill Alexander, Jeff Parlay is here as well. Still to come this hour, Rufus Peabody, who did not get home with Mito Pereira and his $500 ticket at 300-1. We'll talk about his thought process going in to making that bet, also his thought process through the tournament and why he did or did not do anything to hedge out of that. Could he have or could he not have? We'll get into all that. And oh my goodness, of course, we'll talk to Wes Reynolds here momentarily about all the shenanigans of the PGA yesterday and his thoughts on baseball, basketball, hockey, whatever he's doing. The Swiss Army Knife here at VSiN. But first, tweets. We get tweets at Beating the Book Fantasy Wannabe. Fellas got to the feed late. Please bail me out. Were there any tennis picks? Yesterday's EPL stacks need somewhere to go. Or EPL sucks, I guess he meant. Need somewhere to go. I can eat next week. Well, again, we had three tennis picks. To anybody who asked, because of the time zone difference on Twitter, I reply to them. And I told you when we got on the show this morning, we had lost our first dog this morning on Zanevska. Kovinic came all the way back as a plus 185 dog to win. So hope everybody got in on that. And if you did, like, in match when I mentioned it this morning, even better for you. You probably got a better number than I did. So congratulations to those who had that. We only have one more tennis pick this morning. It is Christian Garin, but I got him at minus 135, I believe it was. He's already north of minus 150. I would not play it in the minus 150s, minus 140s at the top. This is from Bill Hooker. To add on to your earlier comments, the lesser the quality of the horses, the more impact the jockeys have. We were saying how not many golf handicappers mention caddies. Maybe they should. Wes Reynolds does. We'll talk to him momentarily. Let's see. 3JackH3131 strongly recommends sticking with the slow jams and not the country genre. The suggestion is noted and is accepted. Thank you, 3Jack. Gerald Aiello, tennis picks for Monday, please. Well, again, if you ask me on Twitter, I will respond to you for tomorrow's picks. Garin is the only one left today, but at the proper price. 3JackH3131 just texted back. Danka Shane, playoff Danka Kovinic. So I'm glad he cashed on that. Ladies and gentlemen, Wes Reynolds and I agree on one thing about the PGA yesterday. I'm sure we do without even having to talk about this beforehand. And that was whatever great CBS producer had the wherewithal to play the Gap Band's Outstanding into a commercial, Tulsa's own Gap Band, Outstanding, a song that stands the test of time 39 years later. It's Wes Reynolds, everybody. How you doing, Wes?
I'm well, Gil. We're up early in the morning. Another Gap Band song for you to do this segment. So, yeah, very prescient by that producer to play Tulsa, Oklahoma's own Gap Band.
It was phenomenal. So let me just ask you this. You did have Justin Thomas, correct?
Yes.
What number did you have pre-flop Justin? What did you have on Justin?
It was 17-1, and look, that, I mean, people will say, oh, it's chalky. It's hard to get these chalky guys home, Gil, and, yeah. You know, had a couple other guys in the mix, Cameron Young, Matt Fitzpatrick, but I never would have thought coming into Sunday morning, Justin Thomas, I think it was Data Golf that put this data out, that he was a 1.2% chance to win the PGA Championship at the start of Sunday morning because he had fallen off on Saturday. He was like, you know, a 7 off the lead and ends up just kind of hanging in there. And you know, I'm always resistant to compare something or someone to Tiger Woods, but it's no coincidence, I don't think, that Justin Thomas, that Tiger Woods is his mentor, because that was very Tiger-esque in the way that he just grinded and he fought. And one of the reasons why I think Tiger Woods obviously won 14 majors is because he just outfought guys. And I think that's what he did yesterday, just kind of hung in there, never gave up, never gave in, and then he was left standing at the end.
It was amazing. I said at the top, I was like, this is an elite golfer at his best yesterday. It was a tour de force from Justin Thomas. Again, 7 strokes back, tied for the third biggest comeback in a major championship on its final day. And, you know, I guess we'll get to the Mito Pereira thing here on the 8th. So JT and Bones McKay, they, before the 18th hole, they're deliberating. Cameras have it. should I go this? Should I go driver? Should I do this? Should I? He needed to come up with a score on that hole. And they talked about it. In contrast, before we ever got to see Mito Pereira and Scott McGinnis have a conversation, Mito was swinging, and not beautifully, it should be added, his driver on 18, which just seemed like, even the announcers like Dottie Pepper and Nick Faldo, they were completely taken off guard. First of all, it was happening before they could even react. He's in the water. I said earlier, it's not quite Van de Veldian, but it sort of conjured it up a little bit. And you're like, well, what are you doing? And then Faldo made the point of how on the green, on the chip, he didn't go behind the green to find out what happens if the ball rolls past it. You talk about caddies. Should we be talking more about caddies when making our golf bets?
Absolutely, especially when you have an elite one like JT does now with Jim Bones McKay. And people, if they don't know that name, they're probably at least somewhat familiar with it on the periphery because he was, of course, with Phil Mickelson for about 20 to 25 years for most of Phil's wins on the PGA Tour, including several major championships. And, you know, Bones was happy doing TV, Gil. He was working with Golf Channel, working with NBC as an on-course reporter. And he even said, he goes, there's one player I would come back for, and it was this guy, Justin Thomas. And I think Justin Thomas got to a point where, keep in mind, this guy has still been winning. He had 14 PGA Tour wins going into yesterday, now has 15, but he hadn't won a major since 2017 when he won at the Wells, or at the PGA at the Wells Fargo. So this was a guy that was like, you know what? I'm an elite player, as you mentioned, and I should be winning more. And that's the difference, you know, to go get this guy to kind of say, hey, maybe he's the guy to put me over the top. And you also mentioned Mito. I think Mito maybe was a little thrown off earlier in the round because he and Matt Fitzpatrick got put on the clock. They had a course marshal. Yeah. I think this was around maybe early in the back nine. And they got put on the clock, which I think is absolutely absurd.
Me too.
When you're the final group on a Sunday.
Well, and when it's not your fault, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they were both kind of blaming each other. Actually, they said something to Fitzpatrick, and Matt Fitzpatrick, who is the playing partner in the final group with Mito, pointed at Mito and said he's the one slowing it up. So then all of a sudden, it's like you're getting tension with the playing partners here because they're blaming each other for the slow play. And look, Mito Pereira has never been in this situation per se of, you know, having the lead where it's on your clubs here in a major championship. We were monitoring it on Betting Across America, Dave Ross and myself. And when you looked, he was odds on favorite, at least for several holes. You know, he's getting up to like -$2, -$3. You know, this is obviously as the holes are dissipating here and there's fewer left to play, and he's still got the lead and nobody is really making a charge. Will Zalatoris isn't necessarily making a charge. Justin Thomas is kind of like gradually there, but he's still 2-3 strokes back. So, you know, it was right there for him, and he just, you know, had not been in that position before at this level.
Yeah, and that said, though, as you're saying that, Wes, I like feel terrible for him because this is going to erase what would have been, I mean, if that final hole doesn't happen, right, the biggest if of all of them, but 71 holes, he won that tournament like four different times, I felt
right,
like, beating back the competition. So, like, whenever he needed a big putt, he got it. And so, like, this could have been the exact opposite narrative after the fact. And I think the world was introduced to Mito Pereira, and I hope he can bounce back from it. We'll never see quite the numbers on him, I would imagine, in the future. Betting-wise, but boy, it's tough. But good on him for standing in front of the cameras at the end and just and talking about it, too. Not a lot of people might not have done that. U.S. Open is the next major, and I'm curious if you have any bets yet in pocket. Obviously, it's I was going to say it's a completely different deal, but this course in Southern Hills played very difficult. I mean, for goodness sakes, 5-under got you to the playoffs in the end, got you to the playoff. Do you have any bets yet for the U.S. Open?
The only thing I have is I do have what I bet on Cameron Smith. This was right during the Masters where I bet him at every single price I could for every single major. And Smith played okay this week. I think he ended up even par. So that ended up being T13. But I do have him for the U.S. Open. I do have him for the Open Championship at 30-1. That's the only guy I have really remaining. And I'll add periodically throughout the next few weeks. But look, we're going to kind of a classic, if you want to say, U.S. Open course, even though it has not been at Brookline in many years. But, you know, this is a course. It's going to be one of those typical Northeast U.S. Open courses. Tree line, tighter fairways, much tighter than we saw this week, even though it still played very difficult, where 500 par ended up being the winning score. But the fairways at Southern Hills are pretty wide, about 40 yards wide with that Gil Hans restoration. But U.S. Open, we know what it is. Tighter fairways, thicker rough. The rough really wasn't that thick very yesterday, but obviously, as we saw down the stretch, plenty of hazards.
Yeah, and last thing about golf, because we'll talk all the other sports here after the break, but Tiger had to withdraw, or chose to withdraw, after the third round. We saw him with a hitch in his giddy up when he walked off the course at Augusta after the final round. He certainly had one here. It's been very common to say, well, you know, come back when it's the Open Championship in England, then it's going to be a Tiger kind of event. Do you still subscribe to that after seeing Tiger?
Yeah, I mean, maybe for the Open Championship, but I think the U.S. Open at Brookline, where he has obviously filed his entry, that might be in a little bit of question, because I think for this year, I just don't know if we're going to see Tiger play any other, like, non-major event. Like, he's not going to play Jack's tournament at the Memorial or any of these lead-in events, and that's just so hard on his body. You could tell that he is not 100%.
Yeah. Wes is going to hang with us here. We'll talk some hockey with Wes Reynolds, some basketball, maybe some baseball, his thoughts on everything else after a tremendous PGA. And congratulations to Wes on hitting on JT. What an epic performance and comeback from Justin Thomas. Coming back, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The nice thing about giving tennis picks at the, you know, not only on Twitter, well before the show starts, the night before when it's at the French Open here, but also at the top of the show, if we're down in one of our plays and I mention it and I say something like, hey, you know, get in and on it if you want, then you get all these texts and tweets back, and it's always gratifying because people get them at better numbers than I do, being in game and being down. So congratulations to all who did that. Las Vegas Chris, by the way, texting in. He goes, I took plus 487 in game. Unfortunately, it lowered my risk amount, but I'm happy. And let's see. Bradley T. Porison, he's like, got her plus 250 live. Congratulations on that. Again, nice numbers for those. And then there's one here on Twitter as well. What number did they get? A lot of people got plus 190 pre-flop. Live plus 200 from Babyface Assassin. So on and on. So good on everybody for jumping in on there. Let's try to get the next one. Wes Reynolds joins us once again. You can follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. That's the number one. He is a co-host of Long Shots here on the network with Brady Cannon, with Matt Humans, and of course, co-host any number of shows. By the way, Jeff, you did a show yesterday?
Yeah, it was with Adam Burke on the run line yesterday.
Oh, 2 hours of baseball. How'd that go?
Well, it went pretty well.
All right.
Went pretty well.
Very good. Did you want to tell everybody, well, the people that were complaining that they didn't get the tennis picks? Did you want to mention?
We'll have to hold that back for a later date.
Jeff said something off air, which he doesn't want to repeat on air. All right, Wes, hockey. What are you thinking here about the Flames being down in this series to the Oilers? The Flames, who many a hockey expert thought were going to roll here.
Yeah, and look, I think that they are the better team usually in the 5-on-5. They've got one of the best 5-on-5, I think, that first line in hockey, led by Johnny Gaudreau, Johnny Hockey himself. But it's been all Connor McDavid. I know he didn't get the goals, but he was just, you know, I made a comment when I saw that video where he went through his legs and got that assist to Evander Kane and led to his hat trick. And you know, Connor McDavid is just playing a different game than everybody else. I don't even know how really to put it. You run out of, like, adjectives or superlatives to talk about this guy, and he's the best player in the National Hockey League, and he's got him winning and got him up 2-1, and you wouldn't have thought that after game one, because I think when you look on the other side, I think Jacob Markstrom is the better goaltender for the Calgary Flames than Mike Smith. Mike Smith will make a couple errors. It almost cost him the Kings series in the first round. kind of put them behind the eight ball where they really had to fight to win that series in seven games. But I still think that the Flames are the better team, but I wonder, we always talk about like the goalie kind of carrying a team, the hot goalie in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Maybe sometimes a player can carry you to a series win, and Connor McDavid certainly is trying to do that. I just thought that, you know, and I did really like the Flames in this series. I didn't bet at the series price, but I thought that they were going to advance because I would have thought that they were so happy to not see Jake Ottinger from the Dallas Stars, who they would put, you know, so many pucks on the net, and the guy was just a brick wall back there. So it's like, okay, we got Mike Smith, so now this is easier pickings. But this series was pretty high scoring in the regular season. I believe it went under last night, but, you know, Flames up against it, but I still think that they pulled this out in seven games. But not going to find really an answer with Connor McDavid here.
Yeah, this is a tweet from Corbin to both of us, Wes. So as a Canadian who is a religious Oilers fan, I'm curious, does the Battle of Alberta get any sort of coverage down there on ESPN? I know how big a deal it is everywhere here from coast to coast since it hasn't happened in three decades. Yes, since 1991. Yes, I mean, it's part of the hockey package, Corbin. And we try to make as big a deal of it as we can. We might not be locked into it as we are in other sports, but yes, absolutely riveting to watch. Any play on either of the two games tonight, Wes?
Yeah, Gil, I don't know what to do with this Florida-Tampa Bay series. You know, we like to kind of toot-toot our horn when we do get one right, but I got to admit, when I get one wrong, I've been dead wrong in this series. I laid it 150 with the Panthers before the series started and, you know, thought, okay, maybe they got – you know, that relief getting by the Capitals to not be the President's Trophy winner, that President's Trophy curse, if you will, that Tampa Bay had happen to them when Columbus swept them in the first round. But you look at Florida, this team's got three goals in three games, and they look just totally out of sync. They're getting off shots. They're averaging 35 SOG per game, second goal scored in the five-on-five in the postseason, but they can't get anything by Andre Vasilevsky. I mentioned that term, hot goalie, and Andre Vasilevsky certainly has been brilliant in this series, and you can really see Tampa Bay's depth. I mean, they're getting contributions from the usual suspects like Stamkos, like Nikita Kucherov, but the guy that leads in playoff goals for this team is Ross Colton with five, and then Stamkos, even not being vintage Stamkos, two goals in game three, looks like he's kind of finding himself again. I sometimes you got to wave the white flag, Gil, and admit that you were wrong. And I thought the Panthers were gonna win this series, but I wouldn't be shocked if they got swept tonight.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Lightning going for a three-peat. Obviously, we have a whole series before we get to this. But if the Lightning faced the Avalanche in the Stanley Cup Finals, what do you make that series, Price?
Avalanche probably small favorites. I'm not into the hockey numbers on a day-to-day basis in the regular season. I bet more in the playoffs than in the regular season. But I would say Avalanche, you know, minus 130, minus 140. I mean, you can't make it too big against the back-to-back Stanley Cup champions. But Avalanche have been so powerful in terms of scoring goals, and you kind of saw that Saturday night. You know, talent, water's kind of finding its level against the St. Louis Blues. It also helps that Jordan Binnington, you know, unfortunate as the injury is, he's been the better goaltender for the Blues, and now he looks like he is out for the rest of the series. And, you know, Colorado, you could just tell, you know, they were like sharks in the water here, that they knew that they had St. Louis and they had a deflated team. But what's going to be interesting is if Carolina can get by the Rangers, and the blue shirt showed some life yesterday, got on the board. It's only 2-1. I took the Hurricanes in the series. Now, when you get Hurricanes and Lightning, perhaps, in the Eastern Conference Finals, Carolina is a very tough team to defeat. So I don't know if necessarily if they beat Florida that they're going to sail through. Carolina is excellent defensively, and they can kind of muck a game up, keep it low scoring. And the fact that they're doing this with Antti Raanta in between the pipes here and not their usual goaltender, Frederik Andersen, who was so great this regular season.
Yeah, the Hurricanes-Rangers one is the one just anecdotally that got the most split. I know a lot of bettors who, not a lot of bettors, but the few hockey bettors I know who swore by the Hurricanes and that defensive prowess that you were just referring to. And then there are some who believe that the Rangers are actually the feisty one that will take down the series. So a lot to be decided still, not only moving forward in the conference finals, but obviously in these series as well. So you're not laying the wood with the Avs tonight?
that would be the only way I would probably go, to be honest with you. But it is price 160. We know Bennington is not going to go. So it's probably the right number that I'm looking at it.
Any baseball plays from you today, Wes? How's your baseball season going, by the way?
It's going okay. Starting to go a little bit better now that we've got some starts in the rotation and we have some more numbers to work with. You kind of fly blind, at least in the first month of the season a little bit, because I'm not somebody, Gil, that bets a lot of spring training. So, I just have never really figured that out, never really had the time, because usually it's going against the NCAA tournament. So that gets my full focus. But, just looking today, kind of leaning a little bit to the Phillies here, and it looks like the market is as well, against the Atlanta Braves, because Phillies, a big win yesterday against the Dodgers. They were DOA. Dodgers do blow the save, though, in the ninth inning, get a run in the top of the 10th, and really their walk-off, Max Muncy makes that fielding error, and they score two runs, so do you get that momentum going into the next game? Market certainly believes so. It's up to about $1.25, $1.30.
And so you're on, just to clarify, you're on who here?
The Philadelphia Phillies.
Phillies, okay, minus 125. We're showing minus 130 on here, but Phillies is the play from Wes. And then the basketball game, are you touching this pre-flop at all? Miami and Boston game four tonight. What a series it's been.
Gosh, I'm resistant to take the under because on Saturday night, I had the hockey game going and the basketball game going, and I'm walking into the Doobie Brothers concert at the Planet Hollywood. So I'm like, okay, yes, I got that empty netter for Colorado St. Louis. So we got one home. Now can we avoid the foul fest here? Because I was on the under 208, Miami and Boston, where it's like if they just miss one shot, they're going to back off and they're not going to foul. So what always happens, and I'm used to this in college basketball, when you get a foul fest, a team hasn't made enough threes and they make every single one of them to continue the fouling. So, I would lean to the under here, but I've been wrong on a couple of these games in this series.
Wes, we started with the Gab Band. We have to end with the Doobie Brothers since you brought them up. You and I hadn't even talked about this. I went by myself to the Doobies this weekend. I felt like it was two concerts in one, right? The 70s Southern Rock Doobies, the Michael McDonald smooth 80s Doobies, and I felt like I was 4 or 5 years younger than everybody else. So I was there for one reason, the Michael McDonald stuff, and everybody else was there for the Southern Rock, and it was just fascinating, two different demos in one.
No, it was a great show. I felt bad because they were playing a couple of their new tracks from their latest album.
Yeah.
They were
good
tracks, but that's when everybody goes to the bathroom and gets their beverages.
It's the worst. Don't do that ever. By the way, Michael McDonald, the greatest. Thank you, Wes. As always, appreciate it, man.
You bet, Gail. Thank you.
The greatest. Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds 1. Talk to him about any subject. How about that? Of course, Wes and I both went to the Doobies without knowing it. Coming back, Rufus Peabody on what could have been with his Mito Pereira bet for $300,000. Next.
A numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. The betting splits page will show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. And now it's updated every 10 minutes so you can see changes in all the action. You'll be able to see where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits yet another way that VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. It's Gil Alexander. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. Join now. I always love this, the beauty of a numbers game. You know, we're blessed to just have people rolling on in whenever I ask or whenever they let me know, and they're like, hey, we're here. So I called up my buddy, or not called up, but I texted my buddy Rufus yesterday, Rufus Peabody, who, of course, tweeted this yesterday in case you missed it. Simply with the words, well, that hurt. $500 bet at 300-1 odds at Circa to win $150,000 on Mito Pereira, who, of course, led this tournament for so much of it, including after 71 holes, and then not so much. And by the way, before the break, I said $300,000, and I said, oh, maybe I misspoke. And you, Rufus, by the way, Rufus Peabody, everybody in studio, you came in and you said, oh, no, that's not a misspeaking at all.
I mean, it wasn't misspeaking because I never said that to you, but I did have more exposure than just this ticket, and it was about $300,000, yeah.
Okay, so...
And what was painful, Gil, is that I actually had even more on Cam Young, and I had Fitzpatrick, and I actually had a little Bubba Watson, too, and some Zalatoris that I bet. Zalatoris is the only one that was bet in tournaments. So basically, like, for me to not hit an outright was pretty painful there.
So you had it all surrounded, basically.
Basically, yeah.
With the exception of?
With the exception of no answer, no JT.
No answer, no JT.
Yeah, answer was closer. I mean, answer was 4 under to start the round.
Okay, so to those who say, you know, how can you not have, the word that everybody's using is hedge. How could you not have, let's use the word monetizing. How could you not have monetized this position? You would say what?
I'd say I monetized it in expected value.
Meaning that?
Meaning that over a long enough time horizon, I'm going to do better by just letting those positions ride than by hedging, given where my bankroll is and the exposure I had.
So you take...
If I had $10,000 to my name, you know, you bet I would hedge. But my bankroll is such that it is not the right move for me.
So your considerations are different, you're saying. And so, yes, to play it, you play it more mechanically than to be concerned with that moment in time.
Yes.
Okay.
I could still react emotionally at times, but
right. Well,
but the decisions are sound, logical, rational.
Right. Because so part of the discussion that's being had on Twitter, by the way, it ranges from a very mathematical discussion to a very emotional one, right? There's all kinds of different responses there. And, you know, one of them is I'll tell you what one response is. One response is, "Oh my God, like you absolutely could not have done anything about it. There is no way to get down a lot on that kind of thing. You could have before the round."
Right, and you probably could have at Betfair, but I think the danger of live betting is the delay. I mean, the fact that I don't know if someone, I don't know if these odds express the current, you know, or expressing information that I don't know, right?
Right.
Like, my TV feed may not be as fast.
Ooh, you think of it super mechanically. Most bettors are not like this because most bettors would say, and okay, so we're not talking about, now here in the state of Nevada, you are constrained by Nevada, what is available to you in Nevada.
In Nevada, there's no way I could have hedged out of that position in tournament.
Not during the fourth round.
Correct.
For sure. Now offshore, right, mid, even back nine, like you could have had JT at 30-1. You wouldn't even have to place that much money on it to make back a whole bunch of money. That wasn't something that was in your thinking to do.
That would have been a very negative EV bet. It would have won, but it would have been a negative EV bet.
So even if it would have been a negative EV bet, let's go with that, but it would have solidified every, with the exception of Answer, who was not going to win, it would have solidified every possible outcome for you.
I mean, not every, like JT wasn't even in the conversation until fairly late.
I will tell you though, I saw a 30-1 on him, and let me just be honest. I stared at it, and I am so regretful that I didn't bet it because while watching that tournament, with all that you're saying, understood.
He's been there.
Maybe I'm a stroke or two behind, but he's been there. We've seen him play like this before. I should have pulled the trigger on it. I didn't. And I thought about your bet, and I'm like, wow, was that not something you thought to do?
I, to be honest, I never even thought about hedging once. Like, I thought about adding to the Mito Pereira position going into round four because I made him plus 141. I could get plus 160. I think there might have been a plus 165 out there. I didn't add to it, though, because I was like, I have enough exposure there.
There's many, many interesting comments on this. Again, the tweet from Rufus, well, that hurt. $500 bet to win $300,000 at 150-1 at Circa. One of the many comments, because there was lots of fascinating reactions. One of the many comments was someone said about hedging that they feel like there's probably a correlation between those that hedge and those that don't, that roughly correlates to really serious professional bettors to people who hedge probably aren't. Do you believe in that?
I do. I think hedging should happen fairly rarely, even for recreational bettors, because when you're hedging, you're
life-changing money, injury, that kind of thing.
And by this, I mean a negative expected value bet to hedge out of a position. Like someone that says, I'm going to bet this team -3 because eventually they're going to get a lead. You know, eventually at some point in the game, there's going to be a live line where I can get the other team at +5.5, or, you know, and so I'm going to just open up that middle. And you know what? Like, I mean, the logic behind there, that is very not sound, but if you place all these futures bets with the thought that, like, if you get into this position, you're going to hedge, you know, you have to take that cost consideration into account with your original bet. If 10% of the time you're going to make a negative 5% expected value bet to hedge, you know, you're really going to eat away at your profits long term.
Did you expect this kind of reaction, by the way?
No, not at all. Honestly, like, you know, I place a lot of outright bets every week.
Yeah.
This was, you know, this is because it's a major, I can get down more. And so it's a bigger swing. It's certainly not the worst beat I've ever had in terms of like, I mean, a one shot lead going into 18, which is one of, if not the hardest holes on the course, is certainly not a gimme by any stretch.
Let me ask this question too, because it occurs to me that some folks listening to this might just have this thought too, which is, okay, Rufus, I get your thought process. Maybe I don't agree with it, but I get it. But is there any part of you in that that says, okay, and I totally get my mechanical approach to this, negative EV, so I'm not going to make the bet, never thought about doing that, but that we're dealing with, if you had made let's say you had thought to make a 30-1 JT bet on hole 13 or 14, whatever it was specifically.
Then Pereira would have won.
Well, okay, right. Well, there's that, yeah. Right? The whole gambler mentality, yeah. The psychology of gamblers. But is there part of you that ever steps back, Rufus, and says, okay, wait a minute, though. While I am this mechanical, we're still talking about a very large amount of money for anyone, right?
Yes.
We're talking about tens of thousands of dollars. You do not sneeze at that, right? That's still it's real
but
money.
But you can't think of it as real money when you're placing these bets. Otherwise, it would just drive you crazy. Like, I don't think of the purchasing power of, you know, the $25,000 I'm betting on this golf matchup when I, you know, or what that's going to do. I think of it as, you know, numbers on a spreadsheet.
Okay, let's talk about one more possibility here. There is no cash out option in Nevada. Cash out options
don't use them.
Listen, here's the thing about cash out options for those who don't know. They are not reflective of true odds. So it is always shaded to the side of the book. So if you think you're making a deal, you aren't. We don't have that ability in Nevada. If there was one, I guess you've already answered the question.
I wouldn't have done it. Of course not.
You would not have.
No. But again, if let's say I had $20,000 to my name, then it would have been the right move to cash out.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least cash some of it out at some point. Because, you know, but I would never have made that bet for $500 if I had $20,000 to my name. That would have been an irresponsibly large bet. And so, I would probably go broke if I was betting like
someone
that.
Someone else jumped in with that comment too, where they were like, so, what gets lost in the discussion is I'm trying to remember who made what comment, but that gets lost in the discussion too, is that most people wouldn't be in this position to begin with for them to then sort of get in your shoes after the fact and make the comment of what you should have done.
But I will say this, like, you have to take each decision individually on its own merits. And just because I had overbet my bankroll, maybe that's a mistake, but, you know, there are situations where hedging would have been the right move. If your bankroll was small enough, that's the case.
That was another comment. Someone said, if you're always looking to hedge, you're probably overbetting your bankroll. Do you agree with that?
I think that I might have said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, I agree with that.
You might have said that.
I that's not a hard and fast rule, but I think most people that are hedging that much probably are, yeah.
And in the end, you made out.
Feel the need to.
In the end, you made out okay in this tournament.
Yeah, I actually had a very good weekend, but it still felt like a big loss because, you know, had Mito hit, it would have been the biggest weekend ever for me. So
ever, that's saying
ever.
Something for you.
Yes.
Instead, it was just a really darn good one.
Yeah.
Your brother didn't take it as well psychologically.
Oh, I mean, I think we both took it the same. Like, you know, we felt physically ill, but
physically ill.
But
you're human.
You experience that disappointment, and you know, you sit with it, and then you move on. And today's a new day. This is a new week, and my figure this week is zero.
More with Rufus Peabody. On the other side, we'll take some listener questions as well. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets and risk-free tokens planning a trip to Vegas. You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards, sports betting's premier loyalty program featuring exclusive offers, incredible incredible experiences and valuable perks when you wager on the BetMGM app. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. It's Gil Alexander, the ever-changing who's going to play and who's not going to play situation and drama continues in the Celtics-Bucks series. What do you got, Jeff?
Celtics-Heat, real quick.
Oh, Celtics-Heat. That's correct.
Tyler Hero, who did not play that whole second half with the groin injury, is not going to play tonight. And a little bit surprising here, this actually has moved the whole point with no Hero. Has moved since that was announced.
Celtics by a touchdown now.
Yeah, now to a whole seven.
With the extra point. Celtics still, by still, seven.
Butler, as of right now, because this was from Spoelstra at their shoot-around, Butler's going to try to go. That's what they're going with. Right,
Butler's
going
to try to go, and Hero did not have a great game in the Heat win in Game 3. So it wasn't like he was a massive contributor.
He barely played.
Game. Yeah. Heat plus 7's not a play? Give me that.
Hopefully Jimmy Butler's there.
If it ticks any more, like, you're going to force me to make a Heat bet plus points at this point. Heat up 2-1. Again, they've won two quarters in three games, up 2-1 in that series. You following basketball at all?
No, not really. I mean,
hockey at all?
Not really.
What is your?
I mean,
what's your
I know what teams are playing and things like that, but
you're that off the grid at this point. What's your betting story? You're a baseball guy. You're a golf guy.
No, I'm just doing golf now.
Just golf.
Golf. I mean, football during the football season, but I got a lot of other stuff going on too.
Yeah, you do.
Unabated.
Unabated.
Yeah, unabated.
You know, unabated plug. Trip Tepper, can you please ask Rufus how much age factors into his golf handicapping, specifically in the four majors plus the players? The current ages of players holding the four major trophies in the players, Scheffler 25, Morikawa 25, Rahm 27, Cam Smith 28, Thomas 29. You've always put age curves into your models.
Yes, there's age curves.
Baseball too.
Yep. I will say that it feels like players are developing much quicker now in golf. Golfers are developing much quicker. Mm-hmm. A lot of that, I think, is the analytics and the mm-hmm. fact that you have guys like Scott Fawcett and who are out there who are able to essentially give these players mm-hmm. like course experience without having course experience. There's a lot more analytics too, and I think that the younger generation is more aligned with that than some of the older guys.
So, in the end, then getting back for those who missed it, the previous segment. So there was no monetization specifically of this ticket then?
No, none at all.
None at all.
And I had some prayer each ways in Europe, so that the place part of that paid, but that's like, you know, pennies compared to the outright part.
And so I guess let me just ask from a more macro perspective. So this approach has served you well over time.
Yes. I still remember the bad beats for sure. Kyle Stanley needing a double bogey to win on 18 at Torrey Pines for the Farmers Open in 2012 and triple bogeying. Mm-hmm. Adam Scott blowing a four-shot lead over Ernie Els with four holes to go in the British Open. You know, I remember those for sure. But, you know, I've hit quite a few as well.
See, this is – so I'm – if people listen to this show long enough, let me just raise my hand and saying, I'm not a hedger by nature either. I believe that was Naughty by Nature song. I'm not a hedger by nature. I am of that ilk. But in a situation like this, I'll get back to it again. Like, this is the part where you separate yourself from the normal person, where you are just so mechanical in this. Again, we're talking about a good chunk of money. You talk about dealing with it. So you and your and you mentioned your brother. I'm sorry to bring your brother into it, but you've mentioned off air. You're like, oh, Tom had a little more trouble with
No. Tom and I both felt like gut punched by it. And that's
so,
what I was saying.
So for what's the amount of time in your brain rattling around in your brain? You say to yourself, man, I should have probably done that. Or does that thought not happen to you?
The thought never happened that I should have hedged. The thought was like, why did that ball not go in the hole on 17? Why did it not go one more inch? Why did Mito hit a driver on 18? Why did he make such a bad swing? That's the thought,
that thing with the driver happened so fast too.
Yeah,
before we could even react,
there was no sort of time on TV where they're talking about it. You know, he's suddenly up there and hitting.
Right. So,
like, it's about having a process and trusting that process.
I get it,
and it doesn't mean that I'm not allowed to be emotional or to feel disappointment. I totally felt the disappointment there. but I know that there's, I know that there's nothing I could have done to change the outcome, and the hedging was not the right move for me in terms of knowing what I knew at the time. And so I experienced that disappointment, and then I reset and move on.
If someone who had multiple of your wealth came to you today and said, "Boy, Rufus, I would have hedged that, and I have 10x of what you have." Same answer. You're just like, "Look, this is how I roll. This is how my brain works in these situations. If it's a negative EV bet, even if it covers all possible outcomes at that point, you wouldn't be interested in just grabbing a 30-1. Just be un-Rufus for a second.
Look, if it was negative, it depends on how negative EV it was. So for me, going into the final round, it's circa I could have laid -175 on Pereira not winning. In which case, like if Cam Young wins, like I'm like, this is amazing, right? But I made the price there, the no, -141. So that's a big negative EV bet. So in essence, like let's say I made the no -165, then it probably is worth hedging a little bit.
Do you ever
mathematically?
Do you ever think to yourself, I need more humility in my model in those situations? Or are you so loyal to your numbers and think that they are? I don't want to say this word because it sounds like I'm being mean about it, but like, or do you say my numbers are infallible? This is what they are.
My numbers are definitely not infallible, but my number on Pereira was roughly in line with the market after you take out the VIG going into round four. So
why didn't you the night before? Let's say we're not in an in-game situation where things are happening on the fly. Why didn't you on the night before sort of, we've had people who are in Survivor, right? Who meticulously, Wall Street guys, who meticulously will figure out all the possible combinations of what they can do and how they can monetize their Survivor entry. Here before, when after round three, before the final round, when you have time to sort of sit quietly and think through these things, wasn't interesting for you to do it that way. If we'll take the in tournament thing on the final round off the table.
I mean, as I said, like the price that I could have gotten would have been so negative EV. Like, would you ever lay -175 if you made a price -141?
I wouldn't in a pre-flop vacuum thing, but if I have your situation where there is money to be made in all possible outcomes, all possible reasonable outcomes, but one, and I'm talking now back to Sunday. I think I probably do jump in and grab the JT. I almost grabbed the JT when I have nothing to do with it.
See, the JT. So I looked at like my price on JT was way, way worse than the markets because that's not a bettable number. Basically, those guys way back, like books. I forget what books were offering.
Now I'm going back to
now we're back live.
On Sunday. He's 30-1 with a handful of holes left. And as you said, I didn't even say it. You said he's JT.
But how many people were in between him and the lead?
I get it.
Yeah.
But
a lot of things had to happen. More than 30-1 worth of things had to happen.
Right. But for you, that was the only remaining piece of the puzzle to secure profit.
Yes.
And I think that's the part.
I think what people don't understand is that for me, it's not about securing profit from this. It's about maximizing my long-term profit from it.
Yeah.
Right. And it is okay if I don't secure profit on this market in 1 week.
I get it. I think it's a fascinating conversation.
And I had profit in other areas of my betting, as I said.
Yeah.
I absolutely crushed on matchups this week.
What was your biggest crushing matchup?
I honestly don't remember.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, I'm sure. I think it's great, first of all, that you put it out there on Twitter because I think
I only post losing tickets on Twitter. That's my policy.
You're not Floyd Mayweather.
No.
I think it's great because it provokes a fascinating conversation, right? That runs the gamut on the spectrum, right? There's the people who get it, like Rufus. I totally get your plus EV approach, and then on the far side of the spectrum, right? There's people who are like, that guy's full of it. I can't believe. And so I just think it's I'm probably somewhere in the middle on it, right? And I just think it's a fascinating gamut to get into.
But Gil, if I had a bet to win $5 million instead of $300,000, it's different. I probably hedge there because it would be the right thing to do mathematically
for you.
It would be the right thing mathematically for me from a like Kelly maximizing my bankroll perspective.
I appreciate you coming in, man. This is fascinating stuff as always.
Enjoy it, Gil, as always.
Rufus Peabody, everybody, at Rufus Peabody on Twitter. You can follow the whole conversation there. Thanks to everybody on the show today. Good luck with all your bets for VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. The Lombardi Line is next.